You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Good evening, folks. A lot of stuff is going on. I've got a lot of stuff here to read to you and talk about, and of course, things that are going on in the world. And we've come up with some an excellent source of some things that a lot of you have been asking me about for years. And I always could give you an answer, but it was always it always cost too much money. So you didn't want that one. Well, we have another source of these types of things, and I'll talk about it later, from a very professional organization that does an excellent job and can give you the least expensive price anywhere. And we've arranged for a special 10% discount for you. Those of you who have been on the website have probably already clicked over and looked into it. The rest of you, I'm going to be talking about that a little bit later tonight. So, get ready, folks. We're just gonna, okay? And we're live tonight. By the way, if I'm talking or something and all of a sudden it sounds like I'm going off the air, it's because I have to turn off the pot and sneeze or something. I'm coming down with the flu, so don't panic. And while I'm here, before we get started with the broadcast, I want to thank Alan Weiner for taking over last Thursday night, which was my birthday, and I took the night off, and just to kick back and relax with some good friends and just have a good time in the evening for a change. Don't get to do that much up here. So, get ready, folks. We're going to do it. Got a stack of things here, so I think I'll just get right into it. Dear Veritas, I'm writing you this letter to extend my subscription to Veritas. I wish to thank you at the outset for such a good newspaper. The information is invaluable and is, in my humble opinion, of such great value that, in actuality, I could never pay its actual worth. So I thank you again. I am an original subscriber to Veritas and have the first issues, and all issues from issue number 1 to issue number 21. All issues of this newspaper, Veritas, are so full of good specific information and are both intrinsic and of immediate value. Enclosed with this letter is a donation to be used for the extension of my subscription to Veritas, along with the $35, which is the subscription price. Please send me issues of Veritas at the above address. I wish, through my current funds, to take advantage of your sale. If, however, I do not, for some reason, make the sale deadline, I am willing, without question, to forward further funds to ensure that my subscription to Veritas be as extended to another full year. I sincerely want to help and to support your efforts and deeply appreciate such valuable information which I have gained through your efforts since subscribing to Veritas and prior to that time. I am a regular listener to the program, Hour of the Time, and have been hearing this program on shortwave since about July of 1994, except for the period of time when the program was as broadcast on the shortwave station WRNO. I listen to this program now on the shortwave station WBCQ 7.415 megahertz. I look forward to hearing from you and to receiving Veritas. Sincerely, Stephen. Thank you, Stephen. I want to thank all of you who called or sent me email or sent me cards wishing me a happy birthday and thanking me for all of the years of work that we've done. It made me feel very, very good, and I deeply appreciate that sentiment from all of you. Here's a card. May this birthday find you surrounded by happiness and good friends. Freedom has no better friend anywhere on earth today than in William Cooper. Signed, Rick. P.S. I really liked this card because the little guy in the picture reminds me of my Shetland sheepdog, Sandy. And it's a beautiful card. It's a beautiful little dog, Rick. I have to tell you, though, it looks like a... That little dog looks like a snack for Crusher. Just joking. Dear Mr. Cooper, I want to thank you for your efforts to wake up the American people. The Hour of the Time is very informative. I like your presentation of material with great details and references to where you obtained the information. I also subscribe to Veritas and read it thoroughly. I do, unfortunately, miss some of your broadcasts, but do listen as often as I can. Last night you asked listeners what they thought of your present series on treason perpetrated against the Constitution and the United States. I'm glad you are presenting this series. I hope it will enlighten people and get them to pay attention to what is going on in our country. Probably because of listening to your broadcasts for several years, I was aware of much of the general and complete disarmament plan. I am looking forward to getting the material you said would be available to listeners. I do make use of the materials and information I get. I have written several letters to my legislators urging them to protect our sovereignty as a nation. Mr. Cooper, I want to thank you again for all your hard work and dedication to save our country. Keep up the good work. Sincerely, looks like Lewis. Thank you, Lewis. And here's another one of our favorite commentaries by Charlie Reese of the Orlando, Florida Sentinel. In an age of lies, actions in Balkans speak louder than words. This is from the April 20th edition of the Orlando Sentinel. In the fog of war propaganda, let us remember the facts. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization is in the wrong. NATO is in violation of the United Nations Charter, which forbids military aggression against a sovereign state at peace with its neighbors. Yugoslavia was at peace with its neighbors. NATO is in violation of its own charter, because it was supposed to be a defensive alliance only. No attack was launched against any NATO country. The United States, which has orchestrated this war against Yugoslavia, has no legitimate, vital, strategic, or even marginal interests in the Balkans. At the time the NATO attacks were launched, a total of about 2,000 people, both Serbs and Albanians, had been killed during a two-year civil war between the government and the Kosovo Liberation Army. To put that number into perspective, about 18,000 Americans lose their lives to criminals in one year. One of the most stupid statements being made in Washington by both Republicans and Democrats is that attacking Yugoslavia was a mistake, but that because it has already been done, the United States has to win. This is stupid for a number of reasons. War is not a sport. What the people making those statements are really saying is that it was wrong to begin killing people and destroying their property, but that because we are doing it, we have to keep on killing people and destroying more property. Second, there is no way the United States can win. If it takes Kosovo away from Serbia and gives it to the Albanians, then the Serbs will fight a guerrilla war to get it back. Moreover, the Albanians will very likely fight to get NATO forces out so they can pursue the goal of a greater Albania. Unless the United States halts its aggression, it will create a fire that will burn well into the new millennium. Finally, to say that Americans and Serbs must die in order to salvage the reputation of President Clinton's incompetent foreign policy team is obscene. The reputations of Sandy Berger and Madeleine Albright aren't worth the life of a rat, much less the life of an American or a Serbian man or woman. In an age of lies, it is always best to look at actions rather than words, and the meaning of NATO's actions includes the following. By expanding the alliance and immediately launching an offensive war against a sovereign nation, NATO has shown that its purpose is to be a weapon to enforce U.S. domination of Eastern Europe. There were, in fact, no negotiations with Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was told, "You will turn Kosovo over to the Albanians. You will accept occupation of your territory by foreign military forces, or you will get bombed." The Yugoslav leader had no choice but to reject the NATO demands. This cannot be blamed on the current leader, Slobodan Milosevic. Any Yugoslav president would have been forced to reject the dictate. The consequences, of course, will be serious. This war has already precluded the chance of any pro-Western person being elected in Russia. Russia, in this case, is on the high moral ground and rightly sees the NATO aggression as a potential threat to it. Ukraine and Belarus, which had given up nuclear weapons, are both now reconsidering the issue. Russia and China have even more reason to establish close military ties. The United Nations, like its predecessor, is a dead issue. The old League of Nations died when it did nothing to help Ethiopia, which had been invaded by fascist Italy. Now the United Nations has done nothing to help the Serbs, who have been attacked by NATO. Clinton has poisoned the future. People who said character doesn't matter were wrong. Oh, yes, were they ever wrong? Bravo, bravo, Charlie Reese. Bravo, Charlie Reese. Of course, he wrote that before they bombed the Chinese embassy. He wrote that before they bombed the Chinese embassy. Dear Mr. Cooper, I have been retired from high school teaching for 6 years and have seen gradual differences in how education has changed. The most recent changes are signals of the wrong direction it has taken. Examples. 1. Fences went up around the campus to keep the inmates in and to keep others out. I did not like fences. 2. Modern school buildings were sometimes constructed without windows. My classroom had windows that were a great help in teaching life sciences. Also, the new research shows the harmful effect of cool white lighting. 3. In the last few years, gates are locked and teachers are issued keys to get into the compound. I like your sense of humor. 4. Students, teachers, and staff must wear an ID tag, which anyone can see. We knew each other in the old days. Along with change is good and other invented phrases, teachers are no longer identifying with their students. As an example, I would rather be on duty and teach when sick rather than trust a sub with my students. This is not the case for most teachers today. I taught the theory of evolution, but never taught it as fact. I never thought that I offended God and enjoyed using the Moody films, which also had a lesson at the end from the Holy Bible. Hopefully things will improve. Sincerely, Bill. Bill is a long, long time contributor of information. I can tell you that just about every week I get a big package or letter full of things from him. Dear Bill, this morning I caught the part of Art Bell's program where William Thomas reported that he had the report from Aquatech of Marion, Ohio on the Kim contrails, which found EDB and 43 other toxins. This was a repeat of his March 17, 1999 interview with Thomas. The four-hour program cost $27.50. The Thomas email is, he gives the Thomas email, his book, Bringing the War Home, is purchased from, and he gives the number. I missed his website, however. However, Dr. Leonard Horowitz has information as well. His investigations have gone beyond vaccines, and his website is www.tetrahedron.org-vaccines. I shouldn't write when I'm tired. Blessings, Annette. P.S. You should have the promised book in 2 to 3 weeks. I have received it, Annette. Thank you very much. I'm in the process of reading it now. But, Annette, if you'll remember when we did our broadcast on the contrails, we had contacted William Thomas and asked him to provide the report from Aquatech of Marion, Ohio. He could not because he did not have it. We contacted Aquatech, and they will not release it to anyone except the people who paid for the report, if anybody did any such thing, and if there is indeed a report, because they will not even say whether a report exists or not. That's part of their method of doing business. William Thomas is a liar. We've proven it so many times, it's absolutely pathetic. If, like I said before, if you want to believe what somebody says, that's fine. But don't try to make us believe it. I've issued this challenge many, many times. Please, if you think we're wrong about something, prove us wrong. That means furnish absolute proof of whatever it is that you contend is right, that we are wrong about. We will investigate. And if we find out that we are wrong, let me say this one more time, I will get on the air and personally correct the mistake. But I don't know why. None of you want to do that. You just want to rail and tell us that we're wrong. If we're wrong, there must be proof that we're wrong. If there is proof, please compile it. Organize it in a logical manner and send it to me. I love to discover the truth. Now, listen to this very carefully, because this was printed in the Wall Street Journal Tuesday, December 29th, 1998. The Wall Street Journal, Tuesday, December 29th, 1998, in Review and Outlook, it's a column by Royce Lamberth, entitled, Disregard for the Law. Now, Here's a question philosophers have pondered through the ages. If someone were to fire a cannonball up Pennsylvania Avenue, would anyone hear it? Or to put it differently, is it true that trees only talk to one another? We raise these mysteries after observing that not much of anyone in Washington beyond a few reporters seems to have noticed that on December the 22nd, a federal district judge denounced the behavior of a group of Clintonesque former Commerce Department officials as akin to hooligans and scofflaws. What's more, he said the department's handling of a lawsuit over the late Ron Brown's trade junkets has been so untrustworthy that he is appointing a special magistrate to keep an eye on them. Excuse me. Remember, folks, I have the flu. I may have to turn off the pot so I can cough or sneeze or something every once in a while. So don't panic if that happens. Judge Royce Lamber, I'm sorry, this column is not by Royce Lamber. There is no author listed. It's from the Wall Street Journal, Tuesday, December 29th, 1998, Review and Outlook, entitled Disregard for the Law. Judge Royce Lamber found that the facts strongly substantiate the claim that the agency was deliberately destroying and jettisoning documents, ending in a flurry of document shredding in Secretary Brown's office after his death in Bosnia in April 1996. He describes the department's 4 years of legal stonewalling as an egregious disregard for the law. Again, one must ponder the Beltway's apparently eternal mysteries. Does anyone connect the dots down there anymore? Or do all the capitals, salons, and scribes really believe the whole issue is just Bill Clinton's patty cake habits? It's been 4 years since Judicial Watch, a conservative legal watchdog group, filed suit under the Freedom of Information Act requesting documents on Ron Brown's foreign trade missions and the possible linkage of seats on them to political contributions. This was the scandal that flushed Democratic fundraiser John Hung out of hiding and into a federal deposition a week before the 1996 election. Commerce had good reason to destroy documents. Back in 1996, even the preliminary memos that Judicial Watch had uncovered were judged by Charles Lewis of the Liberal Center for Public Integrity to support the notion that favorable treatment was given to friends of Ron Brown, Bill Clinton, and the Democratic Party. Seemingly, everywhere Judicial Watch looked, there lurked some piece of commerce dirty laundry. Judge Lamberth notes, "Oh, and as to the all-purpose dismissal of Judicial Watch's lawyer Larry Klayman as a pest," the judge laconically observes, "The DOC appears to have demonstrated a disregard for the law that cannot be explained even by the idiosyncrasies of Judicial Watch's counsel." The stench from Commerce's soiled laundry eventually became so great that the Clinton administration capitulated in August 1997 and asked for judgment against itself, offering to pay $2 million in legal fees to Judicial Watch and to initiate a new document search. Judicial Watch took the unprecedented step of opposing the motion, claiming Commerce had proven it couldn't be trusted, and Judge Lamber agreed. Almost ironically, the Department of Commerce's motion must be denied, not because the evidence fails to establish that the government's conduct was unreasonable, but because the record of misconduct in this case is so egregious and so extensive that merely granting the DOC's motion and ordering a new search would fail to hold the agency fully accountable for the serious violations that it appears to have deliberately committed. Judge Lamberth has now ordered a new search of government records under the close supervision of a federal magistrate. He also allowed a motion to compel new testimony by Mr. Hong, the former Commerce official, because little of his deposition testimony is particularly credible. The Justice Department was also criticized for having repeatedly denied requests for a legible copy of the desk diary Mr. Hong had kept at Commerce. Judge Lamberth specifically ordered Attorney General Janet Reno to provide Judicial Watch with a legible copy of Mr. Hong's diary. In short, the Clinton administration's common practice of misusing the good faith patience inherent in the legal system's procedures has run up against one public official with the courage and the authority to order it stopped. Judge Lamberth's blunt and clear criticism stands in contrast with a postmodern beltway culture more prone to merely smirking at the Clintonites' brazenness or fluttering anxiously over it. The documents that Judicial Watch is really after probably no longer exist. Nolanda Hill, a former business partner and confidant of Secretary Brown, testified this past April that shortly before his death, Mr. Brown showed her a packet of documents that he said had been retrieved from Commerce files during the search for Judicial Watch's FOIA requests. Ms. Hill reviewed the top five or six documents and saw they were copies of letters to trade mission participants specifically referencing their donations to the Democratic National Committee. The documents have never been seen since, and Judge Lamberth notes that Ms. Hill, who is now under federal indictment for tax evasion, has never been questioned by anyone from the government about what she saw. On many occasions, Judge Lamberth concluded, the Department of Commerce appears to have engaged in the illegal withholding of responsive documents, in the removal of such documents from the DOC, and in the destruction of potentially responsive documents in the office of the late Secretary Brown and elsewhere, as well as a great deal of misconduct during the litigation, which the court leaves for another day's decision. We'd say that a week or so from now is an ideal time to take up these matters, which are perfectly relevant to the core issue of conduct that is now before us. Interesting, to say the least, ladies and gentlemen.
When you're out on the range and your stomach screams, a smart fella gobbles the beans.
Pork and beans.
If your tummy starts to grumble, well, you know what that means. It's time to gobble for me.
Beans, pork and beans.
Beans are all that I do. Beans are all that I do. Pork and beans. Beans are all that I do. Beans are all that I do. Eat some beans. Beans are all that I do.
Yeah, gotta have some jeans, pork and beans. Good for you. Dear Bill, enclosed is my usual postal money order, an amount of $25 to be applied to the TV project or anything else you so choose it is needed for. I'm also enclosing a SASE for you to return to me as assurance that you did receive this. I believe I heard you state on the air that you don't want anyone coming up the hill you live on unless it is someone you know. That seems reasonable to me, considering the current situation that you are most likely to be in. You probably get strangers coming around from time to time due to the broadcast. Most of them are probably just curious or something that they heard about you or your stand. Who knows? My daughter, Emily, often sits and listens to the broadcast with me. She called in the night that Dorothy did the What Are You Thankful For Thanksgiving. She colored a picture that we have on the schoolroom wall around here and asked me to send it to you. So I guess she colored it for you. Yes, and I got the picture. And Emily, if you're listening, thank you very much. I have it right here. I'm going to keep it forever because it is from a very, very sweet little girl. And I like sweet little girls. I spend a good deal of my time homeschooling my three children and taking care of their everyday needs. I have been revamping a small, older camper trailer, and we have high hopes that we will be able to travel to Vermont to visit my mother, whom is not at all well. They really want to go visit their grandma, whom they have not seen in years, and my youngest can't remember her, as he was so little at the time. I want very much for them to have a chance to see and know her before the inevitable. Quite some time back, I spoke with Connie on the phone about IS situation. Later, I did receive a letter from you with number and clothes to be used at a later date. I have kept that number well memorized and have often thought about what the occasion would be that I would need it. I do not have any plans on being in Arizona anytime soon, although I would have liked to attend the conferences over the years. Why is it that everybody always wants to attend the conference over the years, but they wait until there's no more conference to want to do it? The conferences were fantastic, I've got to tell you. If we have another one, it'll have to be up here, and it'll have to be only people that I personally know and nobody else. He goes on, I'm rather curious as to one thing, that is, if I was traveling in Arizona, would myself and my three children be at all welcome up that hill? I can certainly understand your need for security and the protection of your family, and would not be in any way offended if the answer was negative. On occasion, from time to time, my little girl has asked me if we would visit Cooper if we were in Arizona. I've always indicated that I thought that we would. I don't need any lengthy explanation. A simple yes or no would be fine. And the answer, of course, is no. And it's not just because we don't know you personally by sight. You know, you could be anybody. If and when the government ever decides to come up here and do their dirty deed, which we all know is going to happen someday, whoever's here is going to suffer the same fate that I'm going to suffer. If you don't believe that, look at all their past fiascos and massacres and murders and despicable actions. And I don't want innocent people up here to be harmed. I really don't. We never know when it's going to happen, so we can't say it's a safe time for anyone to visit. We know it will happen one day. We don't know which day or which hour that's going to be. And so we cannot ever guarantee the safety of anyone. You're not in danger from us. And that's the truth. I wouldn't harm a flea unless that flea was going to bite me. And that's also the truth. I would never harm another human being unless that person was threatening my life or the lives of the members of my family. We know that the government is going to do that. So when they come up here, we are going to defend ourselves. And I hope that we'll make the rest of you proud. We won't make the mistake the Branch Davidians did either. I can guarantee you that. And I continue with the letter. We have often sat and listened to you describe the vivid panoramic scenery, etc. Of course, anybody in their right mind would like to experience such a beautiful place. One never knows, but I seriously doubt that we will be in Arizona anytime soon. I would, however, come down there if requested, if you were in some kind of Waco scene, and I think I could find one, maybe two, that would go with me. I am sure a lot of people say that, but I really do mean it. Signed, Joel. Well, Joel, a lot of people do say it, and I don't listen to what people say. I watch what they do. If you or your friends or anybody else listening recognizes the importance of opposing these kinds of things that happen to people like me, like the Branch Davidians, like Randy Weaver, like many, many others across this country who have been senselessly and unlawfully murdered because they were politically incorrect, or because they told the truth, or simply because they wanted to be left alone and had not broken any laws. But they had beliefs that are a little bit different than the New World Order wants to allow. If you understand the importance of that, then you'll be welcome. But you have to understand that you may die on this mountain with me. And you better think about that. I'm committed 100%, totally and completely. I have given up my whole life. I've lost everything I've ever dreamed of wanting to do, what I studied to do, everything that I really love to try to save freedom for our children. And so, that's my stance on the matter. You should all know that. Let me see. What else have I got here? I'll save this for another night because it's long. This is long, so I'll save it for another night. Because I want to also read this, and it's from some very nice people. And after I read it, then we'll take your calls and find out what you guys think about it. Okay, that's not it. Okay, here we go. Dear Bill, I have enclosed three items. My homework assignment on Article 43 of the United Nations Charter. The Charter and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights are found in the appendix of a paperback book I have. Also, I have enclosed an article on the Masons and a Red Cross Y2K pamphlet. I've been listening to your broadcast since the summer of 1995 on WWCR. I want you to know how important your broadcasts are to me and other Americans. I know there are many times when it looks pretty grim or hopeless, but never give up. I pray for your safety each night and ask God to save this republic. He won't let us down. The time will come when he will deliver his faithful from the power of Satan. God bless you, Cynthia. Thank you, Cynthia. And she did her homework, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if you remember the night that I gave her this homework, but here it is, and I will read to you what she found. This was her question. She wanted to know if the United Nations could direct the armed forces of the member nations. And I told her that it was in Article 43 and told her to look it up. And she did, and here it is. Article 43 of the United Nations Charter. This is in the appendices on page 250 of the United Nations, The World's Last Chance for Peace by Winthrop and Francis Nielsen, in which they have printed the entire United Nations Charter. Article 43, 1. All members of the United Nations, in order to contribute to the maintenance of international peace and security, undertake to make available to the Security Council on its call and in accordance with a special agreement or agreements, armed forces, assistance, and facilities, including rites of passage necessary for the purpose of maintaining international peace and security. 2. Such agreement or agreements shall govern the numbers and types of forces, the degree of readiness and general location, and the nature of the facilities and assistance to be provided. 3. The agreement or agreements shall be negotiated as soon as possible in the initiative of the Security Council. They shall be concluded between the Security Council and members, or between the Security Council and groups of members, and shall be subject to ratification by the signatory states in accordance with their respective constitutional processes. Thank you. And she enclosed this Red Cross Y2K pamphlet that you'd better pay attention to. Because if they succeed in causing the panic that they're trying to stir up across the country, there will be a declaration of martial law. And if there is, remember what we told you will happen. There will be locations of large numbers of people from certain population centers to camps. Here's what it says in this Red Cross pamphlet. It says, be prepared to relocate to a shelter for warmth and protection during a prolonged power outage, or if, for any other reason, local officials request or require that you leave your home, listen to a battery-operated radio or television for information about shelters, where shelters will be available. Don't worry, you'll be directed to your shelter. But once you get there, you're not going to get out. Here's another card. I really like this card, and I hope you do too. If I could write a book to you about your future, it would start out something like this. One day you will find that all the daydreams you planted when you were small have blossomed into giant sunflowers. One day you will turn around and see the world at your front door. One day you will move mountains and write your name across the sky. And on that day, I will be proud to be able to say, I knew you when. Happy birthday, Bill. May you have another 54. Please use this gift for something absolutely personal and selfish. You deserve it. And much, much more. Signed, Warren. Thank you very much, Warren. Of all the cards I've received, I like this one the best. And I hope that you're right. I hope this card comes true. I really do. I really appreciate this. But I'm not 54. I did some calculating the other day on my birthday. I am 56. You see how you lose count of the time? I had no idea. I'm 56 years old. Yes, I am. Dear Mr. Cooper, happy birthday. I guess your listeners did not know about your birthday until it was announced last night. I believe you are doing a good thing in going over the treason papers and the gradual implementation of the United Nations treaties. The one thing that sticks in mind is that the United States cannot make treaty with a non-country. The United Nations is not a country. As rotten as our leadership is in Washington, D.C., they will not expose the United Nations to the public as a traitorous group of people with the same intent to destroy freedom everywhere. That's because they're the same kind of people in Washington, D.C. They want this to happen. And you're right. If you read the Constitution, the United States cannot make a treaty with a non-country. It's just another instance where they've thrown the law into the trash can. None of you ever thought about that. The United Nations is not a country. It doesn't represent any nation on this earth. Nobody who goes to the United Nations has been elected by anybody. Don't you understand that this great world democracy they keep talking about is not a democracy at all? It's exactly what I've been telling you it is. It's going to be, in fact, it already is in some places of the world, the Fourth Reich. You think Hitler was bad? Wait till you see what they're building to rule the world now. He continues, I hear from another broadcast out of Austin, weekdays, 12.160, 12 noon, by John Stattmiller, that foreign troops are located there because of I-35 being designated as an international route to be patrolled by international police. Bullshit. What are you doing listening to John Stattmiller? All you ever get from Stattmiller and Kornke is bullshit. Tons of it. Literally, tons of it. I've mentioned this a few times, but I have no verification. That's right, because there isn't any. And they never cited any documents, nor did they give you any sources to find those documents. It's bullshit. He says, I do not know where Mark Kornke is, but there could be a split of the two. Resistor is interesting to read and mostly on the right track, but have read one article on strong prejudice of Jews. Second order of longevity, Sports Plus this time arrived. Sincerely yours, Bill. Thank you, Bill. I like to get letters from, but this is the same Bill that you heard from a while ago. I get a letter from him every week, along with information and all kinds of things. For those of you subscribing to the Resistor, if you really believe that it's published by a bunch of rebel underground special forces personnel, and that the government is trying to find them so that they can stop them from doing it, well, you're not playing with a full deck of cards. You see, they publish this little newsletter called The Resistor. They have a post office box where you can order it. You know, you can send your money and order it. And if you don't think that by now the government couldn't find them and arrest them, then you probably need to be locked up. These guys are compiling names and addresses of people who subscribe to their resistor. And when the time comes, those people are going to disappear. Dear Mr. Cooper, great, great. Your program on 426.99 was the best ever. You're the only one who is informative and inspiring. Don't let up. You're doing a tremendously fine job. Sincerely, Seymour. Anxious to hear when your TV program is up and going. Thank you, Seymour. Here's another, I think this is a column, another column from Charlie Reese. 4/21/99, April the 21st, 1999, of the Orlando Sentinel, that's Orlando, Florida, the Orlando Sentinel, written by Charlie Reese, of the Sentinel staff. If we're so great, why don't we pick on somebody our own size? I am, as the baby boomers are fond of saying, conflicted about this war in the Balkans. My natural predisposition is to cheer any time American forces go into combat. On the other hand, I hate a damned bully, even if it's the United States. I hate it that the politicians in Washington keep using our forces to bomb little countries because those politicians are annoyed with the little country's leader. How about a fair fight once in a while? How about bombing a country more our size? I kid you not, but if I were the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, I would be embarrassed to announce, as it did last week, that the alliance's bombing campaign was, quote, beginning to have an effect, end quote. Wow. That's like a professional wrestler saying after going three rounds with a 12-year-old, I'm beginning to wear him down. Combined population of NATO's 19 countries, about 600 million, give or take 50 million or so. Population of Yugoslavia, 10 million. Combined armed forces of the NATO countries, easily 2 million or more. Yugoslavia's total armed forces, 114,000. And after 3 weeks of high-tech bombing and missile lobbing, NATO's air attacks are, quote, beginning to have an effect, end quote. As I said, wow. Good thing Yugoslavia doesn't have 20 million people. It might take months before NATO's bombs could begin to have an effect. If President Clinton wants to be macho, why doesn't he bomb North Korea? Now, North Korea is still a little country compared with us, but it is virtually all military. It has a million-man army and 4.7 million-man reserve force, not to mention more than 10,000 surface-to-air missiles. Now, that would be, if we kept the nukes out of it, a bit more of a fair fight. And all of these armchair generals and all of these pompous spokesmen for NATO, the Pentagon and the State Department, all of these bloodthirsty little academics who chatter on television would have something interesting to talk about. As it is, they mainly have to make excuses for blowing up passenger trains, bombing refugees, and killing some farmer's dog. And of course, boast about the bombing beginning to have an effect. Yes, I'm conflicted. I really don't want a war with North Korea. It would be terrible. The official American estimate is that casualties would run 70,000 or more per day during the first 72 hours. Besides, if it takes a month to move 24 Apache helicopters from Germany to Albania, I don't even want to know how long it would take to move them to Korea. As a matter of deadly, serious fact, one of the dangers of these Yugoslav follies is that they may encourage somebody, such as the dictator of North Korea, to think that now is the best time to make a move on South Korea. NATO, frankly, has not been too impressive in its first war, even against a small country with few resources. What I wish is that Americans would wake up from their television trance and realize that our government, the people we elect, have been acting like crypto-fascists in recent years, bombing and starving people in small countries simply because the politicians are frustrated or need a headline to distract attention from their personal failures. We ought to be the good guys, and we aren't. We are meddling in other people's countries, bullying them, killing them, breaking international laws right and left, acting the hypocrite, and being an all-around jerk of a nation. The fault lies with the civilian leadership, not with the military, and ultimately with us because we elect the civilian leadership. For a self-governing people, we haven't done such a hot job in recent years. Bravo, Charlie Reese. Bravo, Charlie Reese. But I would disagree with him on one thing. He says the fault lies with the civilian leadership, not with the military. I beg to differ with that point. You see, the military takes an oath, each and every man, officer and enlisted. The oath is to protect and defend the Constitution for the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. To obey the orders of the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States, if and only if those orders are constitutional and lawful. What we are doing in Yugoslavia is unconstitutional. It is unlawful. We've broken every law that there is. It is criminal. And, as you're going to find out, somebody is trying to do something about it. Here's another card. The beautiful scene of a lot of rowboats beside an old wooden pier and what looks like to be lobster traps piled on the pier. Thinking of you on your birthday and wishing you every happiness. Best wishes on your birthday. Hope you have many more. Al and Diane. Thank you, Al and Diane. And here's another one from them, which came a couple days later. Hi, Coopers. Hope this finds you all well. Al and I are still plugging away. Al wanted me to ask if we'll be getting you on shortwave on the West Coast anytime soon. Use this check where you need it most. God bless you all. Sincerely, Al and Diane. Yes, we can be heard on the West Coast, Al and Diane. I'll write you a letter and tell you all about how you can get it. Happy birthday to someone special. May your day be just like you. Wonderful. Happy birthday, Dennis, Retha, Andy, and John. And thank you very much. These are dear friends of ours. And here's a picture of George Orwell with his adopted son, Richard, taken November 1946 from the collected essays, Journalism and Letters of George Orwell, published in 1968. Dear Bill, never give up the fight for freedom. We have to steal our true American history and heritage back from our oppressors. Yes, we do. Thank you. And what is this? Oh, my goodness, another Charlie Reese editorial. But, we're close to the top of the hour here. So why don't we take a couple of calls, and then after the top of the hour, I'll continue. Number's 520-333-4578. The phone's open right now, and we'll take a couple of calls until we do the station thing at the top of the hour, and then we'll continue. Good evening. You're on the air.
Mr. Cooper.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you taking my call. I'm going to ask this question, and I'm going to get off the air so you can answer it. Very new listener, and I guess you're going to know that by me by this question, but what is your take on Y2K? Haven't been hearing much about it. I'm going to get off and let you answer it. Appreciate what you're doing. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, like I've said, every time someone has asked this question, and it was asked again, I was the guest on the Alan Handelman East Coast Live show last night, which goes all over the country. Has a whole bunch of affiliate stations. And I was asked the same question last night. Y2K is not a problem. It may be an inconvenience. some services or transportation systems might trip off the line for a little while, but they will be fixed and they will be back up and running within a reasonable amount of time, I can assure you. Most Y2K problems have already been fixed. Yep, that's right. Despite all the baloney and bullshit that you're hearing from everybody else that are ringing down this doom and gloom, they're already fixed. And that's a fact. Remember they told us that in January, the first Y2K problems would cause major shutdowns of services and power plants and companies and trains and stuff like that, because some companies and government organizations go to a fiscal year that starts in January, and then they would be using the 2000 date. Well, nothing happened in January. And then they told us April was the next month, and all of a sudden in April we're going to see big shutdowns caused by computers, caused by Y2K, and the power outages and all that kind of stuff. Well, gee, folks, nothing happened in April. Now they're telling us June. June is the month. Well, guess what, folks? Nothing's going to happen in June either. Okay? So, the only threat that has anything to do with Y2K is all of the hysteria being drummed up by all these doomsayers who are making fortunes selling you Y2K products. Some of them have even changed the name of their companies to Y2K this and Y2K that and Y2K food storage and Y2K generator company and all this kind of stuff. But you see, you don't need all that stuff just for Y2K. You should have been building up an emergency storage of food and water and a backup generator for power and all kinds of things in preparation for any emergency simply because you love your family. But no, see, if a flood were to hit you last year, you wouldn't have been prepared. If a hurricane would hit you last year, you wouldn't have been prepared. If a volcano had erupted, you know, near your home last year, you wouldn't have been prepared. You would have suffered terribly because you weren't prepared. The only reason you're preparing for Y2K is somebody is whipping you into a hysteria. They're scaring you half to death. And they're making tons of money doing it. And they are preparing you to panic and cause civil unrest, a run on the banks, to intentionally create a situation where they can declare martial law and bring this country to its knees. That's the danger from Y2K. What do you care if the train stops for a little while? What do you care if the power goes off for 5 or 6 days, or even if it goes off for 2 weeks? I guarantee you it will come back online real quick. So what do you care? And if you love your family, you didn't have to be whipped up into a hysterical frenzy because of Y2K. You would have made preparations for any conceivable kind of emergency simply because you love your family. Not because some doomsayer got on the radio and told you that you're all going to die on January the 1st, the year 2000, because of Y2K. And so that's my answer to that. You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. And whoever it is that's whipping all this frenzy up, here's what I got to say for you, buddy.
I'll be glad when you're dead, you rascal, you. And where they have legislation which prohibits the ownership of any type of firearms, the crime rate is out of sight. Far exceeds any other city, county, or state in this nation. I'm talking, Mr. Owens, about the city where you live, Washington, D.C., where you have passed just such legislation. Taking the guns away from the people because they have no rights under the Constitution. And we can all see that it doesn't work, but still the stupid sheeple cry to have the guns taken.